Good evening and welcome to Heartwood Part 6, the final part of the story. We told you how the king had disappeared long ago, and his queen, a woman of the Fae, was so stricken with grief that her three sons went in search of a tree with magical healing leaves, something that was the stuff of legend, and it was only the hermit on the edge of the city, the hermit with no memory, that had given them a map that had enabled them to quest. But they had argued so much that they tore the map apart, and when they came to a fork in the road, they made the first grown-up decision they'd ever made, to go their separate ways. Each would take a fork and meet back in 1 month's time. If they had not found the tree, they would take the fourth road together and work as one. I've told you the story of the eldest prince and what he learned. I've told you the story of the middle prince and the journey that he took. And I've told you the story of the youngest prince and the gifts that he bestowed. So let me conclude this story now. Heartwood, Part 6. The moon was full and round and bright, with not a cloud in the sky, when the eldest prince made his way back to the fork in the road. He sat at the junction. He was the first one to get back, and he lit a fire, and he thought how his greatest weakness had not helped him at all, but it had not hindered him either. He thought of all he had learned, and as he sat there warming his hands by the fire, boiling up a small kettle of tea, he heard a noise in the undergrowth. His hand went immediately to his sword, thinking some wild beast would be ready to spring and attack out of the dark. But there he saw his middle brother, bedraggled, hungry. Yet strangely, normally when he looked and felt like that, he would be as grumpy as a thundercloud. But he smiled and said, "Brother, so you did not find the tree either by the look on your face. No, it seems both of us have failed. Maybe our youngest brother will be more successful than us." And the two of them laughed and hoped that it was so, and then took a moment to realise this is the first time that they had hoped that the younger brother did something better than them. For it wasn't their own egos at stake. It was their mother's health. Towards dawn, both had fallen asleep, and the fire was dying nothing but grey ash and a few burning embers, when into the camp walked the youngest brother. They actually heard him before they saw him. He was playing a tune on his pipe. Well, a tune is probably a generous description of such a noise, but suffice it to say that any wild beast that had been sneaking up on the camp had second thoughts and returned back to the safety and sanctuary and quietness of the undergrowth. When they saw their youngest brother, they greeted him and looked expectantly, but he shook his head. "Well, it seems that the three of us must travel on this fourth path together, and in good companionship." And indeed, they did. But the path wasn't as easy as the other three. It twisted and turned, and once they got completely lost, it was only when they put the three pieces of the parchment map together, they could see in faint writing, almost as if it had been traced with the fine bone of a fish, the words, the riddle, that went like this: "Follow the trail of the dead by day and the sun by night." Now they put their heads together, and instead of arguing, they pulled all the lessons they had learnt and "Follow the trail of the dead by day." Well, they had been on this quest, this journey, for so long. The seasons had changed. They were deep in a forest, but only certain trees shed their leaves. Others were tall, straight pines that stretched to the heavens. And they noticed that only certain paths had piles and piles of dead leaves upon them. follow the trail of the dead by day. And that is exactly what they did. They followed the paths that contained only the dead leaves, and they just knew that they were on the right track. But how do you follow the sun by night? Well, it was then that the middle prince remembered a story that their nanny had told them about the moon, and how the moon had known shame, and for that day onward had to continually reflect the light of the sun. I don't have time to tell you that story, but of course, the light of the sun at night is the light of the moon. And the light of the moon shone down strong and fearless upon the path. And the three brothers made good time until they came, well, to the centre of the forest. There was a great and magnificent tree, the bark silver and beautiful, but many colours seemed to radiate from beneath the bark as it peeled off. The leaves seemed to flutter in a light breeze, and as the sun rose, it seemed to dazzle them. It's as if the underside of the leaves were actually silver. The eldest brother took a bag that he had clipped to his belt, was already ready to stride forward, reach out his arm and grab some of the leaves. When the middle brother stopped, he said, "Look, brother, look." And there, entwined in the branches, was a great snake. It opened its mouth lazily, and from its great fangs poured a poison so venomous that wherever it touched the ground hissed and steamed, and whatever was there growing withered and died until there was nothing but black sludge upon the ground. All around the tree there were patches of withered, blackened grass and shrubs. "Hold your hand, brother," he said. "This thing will surely kill us." They sat for a long time, and the moon rose. She is a benevolent creature. The eldest brother breathed in, and as he breathed out, he sighed and said, "Oh, would that my greatest weakness was my greatest strength." He didn't even understand the sense of what he was saying, but of course, you know, and I know, that his greatest weakness was that he often felt invisible, and that is exactly what happened. The minute the words were out of his mouth, it was like a wish, a spell that was granted by the moon, and he became completely invisible. The other two stared, and then, realising what had happened, passed him the bag, and he began, in the dark moonlight, to scramble up the tree. The snake, waking, aware that there was movement but could see nothing, trying to sense the movement, and while the middle brother, seeing the snake get closer to his brother, he too breathed the words, "May my greatest weakness be my greatest strength." And of course his greatest weakness was he was so changeable, and in that moment the moon changed him. Oh, but not into some fierce animal that could do battle with the snake, no, into a small bird with a wounded wing. He began to hop pathetically on the grass beneath the tree, and the snake, seeing such an easy snack, slithered over the branches and hung its head down lazily, thinking, "Oh, a light snack before lunch." The venom pouring from its fangs made almost a cage of poison, liquid poison, around the bird, so it could not move, and in that moment, when all seemed lost, the youngest brother breathed and sighed and said, "Would that my greatest weakness could be my greatest strength." He put his pipe to his lips and he played for all he was worth. And do you think that music changed into some beauteous melody? No, it was still like a parking meter, screechy, scratchy, awful. But you see, he didn't stop. He did not stop. And what is maybe a horrendous melody to you and I, who knows how a snake perceives that? It began to listen to the sound, move its head from side to side, close its jaws. The poison ceased, the bird escaped. The snake wound itself so sleepily round the branch, it knotted its own tail. It lay there, dreaming, while the youngest brother played. The eldest brother snatched the healing leaves, put them in the bag, jumped down from the tree, scooped up the middle brother that was still in the shape of a broken-winged bird, and the three of them ran. And maybe that snake is dreaming still. The middle brother changed in the eldest brother's arms, and they tripped and stumbled, but instead of shouting at each other, they rolled and laughed. They had done it. Their greatest weakness, their greatest strength. They had worked together. They'd got the healing leaves. They were about to go straight back to the palace when it was the middle brother that said, "You know that hermit that has no memory? It must be a terrible thing to have no memory. Why don't we give him one of the leaves? Give him his memory back." And so before they went straight back to the palace of the City of Silver, they made their way to the edge of the kingdom, to the cave of the forgetful hermit. The sun was high in the sky when they got there. They stood at the entrance to the cave. The hermit was stirring a pot of some odd-looking stew. He looked up. "Woo!" he said. "Who are you?" And they smiled. "Oh, we are just travellers. We have passed this way before, and we would like to make you tea." "Well, it's not often you get people offering to make you a cup of tea." And so they took a couple of the leaves, and they brewed them over the water, and they made an infusion of tea that they gave the hermit to drink. And he drank deeply, and it was sweet and warm and so soothing. Two great tears began to trickle down the dirt on his face. "I remember," he said. "I remember." And they were so surprised, they thought that if he could remember, he would feel happy, not sad. But he sobbed and sobbed until they took out their handkerchiefs and tried to dry his eyes, but it just wiped off the dirt from his face more, and until he said, I was a king. I had a hound and a hawk and a horse. And I was so arrogant, I thought nothing could touch me. And I found the tree with the mystical healing leaves. Oh, I thought of what I could gain. And my hawk tried to warn me, my hound tried to warn me, my horse tried to warn me, but I would not listen. I stretched forth my hand, and as that snake, that venomous snake, poised to strike, it was a bite so deep, it was my horse that reared up and knocked the snake away, getting wounded in the process. It was my hawk that bit off a leaf and had his wing broken and torn. It was my hound that took that leaf and placed it on my tongue. And then I remember nothing. It was as if the leaf was enough to save my body, but not my memory. I lost my memory, and I have been here ever since. And those faithful animals, well, who knows where they are? Well, you know, and I know. And the three princes, they looked at this man with his dirty face and his long beard and his curling fingernails, and the eldest said, "Dad?" For of course it was the king, their father, the king of the City of Silver. And because they had been practical and well brought up young men, they said, "We really need to give you a bath before you see mother." Well, they went back to the palace, the City of Silver. They bathed their father, trimmed his beard, washed his face, cut his nails, dressed him in fine clothes, gave him the bag of healing leaves. And he made his way up to the top of that tallest tower, terrified of what he would find. There, on the top of the tower, his queen. And she was covered in moss right up to her chin, and the moss flowed over her like a garment, and across the top of the tower and down the sides like a great green waterfall. when she saw him. When she saw the king, her husband, home after all this time, do you think she needed those healing leaves? No. She did not need one of them. She stood up strong and tall. She cast off, because she remembered to do such things, and she threw that moss across the city, and she ran to her husband. And they say that they buried those leaves beneath the city, which is why it is so wooded, and will heal you if you walk in the cool green of it. And you will still find the queen's own moss beneath your feet. And the city of silver has long since gone, and the forges have long since been silenced. But the people have remembered how to dream. And that is the story of Heartwood, and thank you for listening.